you now to your regularly scheduled program.
Hey everybody, this is Josh Martin.
And I'm Marty Hyde.
Hey, how you doing?
Welcome to the Tattoos and Jesus Podcast.
I am very happy to be here!
Here at TNJ, we seek to blend the righteous with the ridiculous.
Please explain.
We discuss coffee, counseling, Christianity, and whatever else crosses our mind.
We hope you enjoy it.
Okay, let's go.
Welcome back, everyone, to another weekly episode. Pretty much weekly episode of Tattoos and Jesus. Here's your co-host, I'm Marty Hyde. Joshua Martin.
Yo, yo, yo.
What's up?
You know, living the dream out here.
Living the dream.
Warm weather. Smelling the summer.
Yeah. Like we said last week, shout out to our new listeners. We've continued to, it looks like, have some new people interact with us. We love you. We appreciate you. Thanks for the follow. Go check us out on Facebook, too, if you want to see what our ugly mugs look like. Josh, I have a question.
Go for it.
Do you ever eat oranges? Like the fruit?
Ever?
Orange. Yeah, like, do you like oranges?
I mean,
this is not a hard question.
I don't really choose fruit.
You don't choose fruit?
I love grapes. I love apples. Oranges are good, but I don't ever, like, just eat them.
Oh, man. I love fruit.
An orange is pretty good in a blue moon, though. But as far as eating the slices,
I love oranges and limes when they're in the proper beverage.
Right. My wife eats the cuties.
Yeah. Cuties are amazing because they like self-peel. Like they're just pretty detached.
Right. So what about oranges? Where are we getting at? What's going on right now?
So recently, I've been going like. My wife has a Costco membership. We have a Sam's Club and a Costco membership. You go to either one of them on a Saturday, and you know what you get? Free samples.
Oranges.
Okay? It's irrelevant to this conversation. But the last few times that she's went, I went with her, and I have grown to really be excited about trips to Costco and Sam's.
For the samples?
I can't explain it. If you've been there, you understand. It's
for
contagious.
The samples? Or just
samples is a large portion of it. But then you're walking around, and they just have these large amounts of food. Anyway. Short answer is past Saturday, picked up some oranges. I like oranges a lot. They're great. You grab one, take them with your lunch, get a little citrus pop in your afternoon.
Citrus.
So we picked up these oranges, and they almost look like grapefruit in the middle. They're called like red oranges or something. The insides are red instead of your traditional orange color. The outside's still orange, but it tastes just like an orange. Like it tastes like whatever taste is in your head right now, that's what it tastes like. They were delicious. Not why I'm telling you this story. I did something today that, to my recollection, with a true orange, not a cutie, but with a pure orange, I did something today that I don't think I've ever done in my life.
Which is?
I peeled it with one peel. Like, I cracked the peel and pulled it, and I was able to unwind the entire peeling without it breaking into sections. Because normally when you peel an orange, because an orange, that skin is attached to the fruit. It is not an easy peel, but I got the peel, had a good peel going. I had a good strip going, and I unwound it. You can look in the trash can right now. There's an entire orange peel that if you pushed it together would represent the entire orange. No breakage.
Big moment.
This is a big moment. Like, this is a big deal.
Why don't you keep the peel?
I don't think it'll keep very long. I don't think it'll keep long.
So it's kind of like when you're gift wrapping a present. And your scissors hit that glide.
Oh, yes.
And it's a perfect glide all the way across.
Yes. That is such a good example.
And it's the same thing as the orange peel.
I mean, I should have put more thought into, like, what are other moments that feel like this?
This, like, an orange peel moment.
Or, like, have you ever been driving and you hit cruise control just right that you stay the speed, but you never catch up to people? You just stay in this perpetual state of just going? Is that a bad idea?
I'm going to be honest. This is really the first vehicle I could use cruise control on.
Do you know
how
to use it?
And I haven't used it yet.
Oh, no. My God. You've never used cruise control in your life?
Not often, if I remember.
Anyway,
but
yes.
It seems like it would work.
Dude, let me tell you something. It feels good. Like, I almost didn't eat the orange. I was almost felt so satisfied just from the peel. I didn't even need the orange at that point.
That's not even true.
Oh, I ate it. I'm just saying, like, I could have done
you
about
could
it.
You could have just grabbed the peel.
I'll go, like, the orange did not taste as good as the peeling felt.
It's almost like those, like, this video is so satisfying, and then mm-hmm. it goes through mm-hmm. all these different videos of like perfectly like
Play-Doh. Yes. And it just feels so like my 8-year-old, he goes, that's so satisfying.
And so if you would have videoed that, it could have went viral. Yeah. You missed your opportunity.
I missed it.
From now on,
I'm peeling that orange on video.
On video. Yeah.
I'm gonna start a whole channel. Marty peels an orange.
Marty peels an orange.
We'll see the bad ones, the good ones.
Every day. And then whenever you get a perfect peel,
man,
it's going to be incredible.
Like people are just going to start celebrating.
It's going to be like when you're watching a panda birth a child or whatever.
That's like exactly on what I was thinking about.
Okay, so what's the fascination by things like that?
About pandas giving birth to children?
Well, you know, there's always like, is that a real thing or is that just in movies?
I don't know what you're talking about. I immediately flashed like live, you know, Ace Ventura when Jim Carrey like, comes out the rhino butt?
Yeah. Well, it's like live streams of like real life that take forever, but tons of people like want to watch it. Like, so.
I don't know. I don't have that.
Like, there's a birth fetish of an animal at a zoo. Yeah. And it's like the second whatever white rhino in the world. And everybody watches the birth. Or, that's not a good example. I was about to say the Murdaugh trials, but it's the same in the same sense. Like, everybody hops on board.
I think people feel like they're watching a moment. Like you want to feel like
you're... miss history.
Yeah, like the Game 7 moment. Like, you don't want to feel like you missed that.
Right.
Like, to be present in that.
I did that one time randomly. Don't ask me why. It was a big hurricane that was supposed to come through maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And I watched... I was working at the methadone clinic, so I got off at like 1:30 in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
I was playing basketball at like 5. So I sat on my phone, I didn't have anything to do, and watched this live stream camera out in the middle of the ocean somewhere of this hurricane like developing.
So there wasn't even commentary.
No, it was just this one. Like I was fixated on this one like bobbing metal pole in the middle of the wake. Like it was very underwhelming.
For hours.
For like 2 or 3 hours waiting for this hurricane to just like come through.
You're complaining because somebody watches a rhino give birth.
Right.
And well, you watch a bobbing.
They were talking about it being like just like a cat, the worst category you've ever seen in the middle of the ocean. This live stream camera is going to capture this just ginormous. And it was just like bad waves and dark clouds. It wasn't. It turned out being absolutely nothing.
You know what gets me the most is when you told that story. I thought you were going to say like when I was 17. And you go 3 or 4 years ago.
Oh, I was.
I was like, I knew you almost.
Oh
there.
Yeah. It was close. Yeah, not great. But we get. I mean, you don't want to miss the moment, though.
I know.
You don't want
to
miss the
moment. I mean, to be fair, during a good good weather event, watching the Weather Channel is enjoyable. But there's commentary.
Yeah.
I'm not just watching a metal buoy.
Well, nobody's going to. There's nothing to talk about. Like, it was just.
And it bobs again, harder than before.
Right. Oh, it got up. It got up in the air a little bit. Is there anything recently you've been fixated on that you're keeping track
of? Listen, all right. So speaking of my TikTok. Speaking of TikTok with Marty. Have you, I don't think you saw it because I sent it to you and I was like, dude, you need to check this out. Did you see or have you seen anything before I sent it to you about the apostle David E. Taylor who has been in court recently? I'm assuming it's recent because it's been filling up my feed and the more you watch the videos, the more of those videos present themselves. And so I haven't really dug too deep into it.
Right.
Beyond the gossip level. But he was a self-proclaimed apostle of Christ. He ran what's called JMMI Ministries, which is all but proven to be a cult, I think, you know, in all ways. And he's getting in lots of troubles, what it seems like. I think I even know someone that somehow interacted with JMMI, and they do not speak highly of it. Have you ever heard of that?
JMMI?
So I know we talked about cults. We talked about a couple prominent cults. And so this really isn't a conversation about cults as much as how much this guy stands. Like, he makes my skin crawl, right? And so he reminds me of people like Kenneth Copeland, Jesse Duplantis, some of these guys that have made millions, if not billions of dollars manipulating the spiritual beliefs of their audience.
Right.
Like, so I'm watching these videos. Never heard of this guy before. And now I'm sucked in. Because he's like...
And now you're depositing money to Jay.
Right.
Once
all
a
I
month.
Know is that I'm going to be a millionaire.
Right.
Because he literally says, the Lord came to me. He spoke to me. I am the highest order of God on this earth. When I speak, you listen. And then he says, you need to send me your money. You need to send me all your money. And then he prays, quote unquote, it ain't to the same God I pray to. And he's like, I want to break this spirit of stinginess to those listening, because there are people with hundreds of thousands of dollars that need to give me everything they have.
Maybe he needs to be...
executed.
The I don't know about that one. Maybe he needs to be the radio fundraiser people that you hate so much. Maybe
the radio station. Yeah. Man, I don't like those guys. No, they're not. They're not as bad as him. But it's just, and there's just, so in court, you can see where he is just so full of himself, so arrogant, you know, but he tries to humble himself to the level of the courts. You know, and they're presenting, and I get it, like the courts probably, they may or may not come from a similar faith. There's no telling, you know, who the attorneys and the judges or what their faith is. But they're like presenting this information like, you preach this, but then here's these records. And he just like, there's this false humility. Like, it's just that it's so false that it's arrogant. When he's like, no, like, you know how you soften your speech and you sound yeah. so condescending. That's him. He's like, no. He said, that is not true. Like, I don't understand. And he just acts confused. Like, y'all are idiots. Like, why would you oppress like God's anointed one? Yeah. And there's these videos of him like saying, you know, I don't take a salary. Like, people try to give me money. My board has told me, like, the law says that based on the amount of money that comes to the ministry, I am worth receiving $300,000 to $500,000, but I refuse to take a salary. But he's cruising around in a Bentley that's probably written off by the ministry itself.
Right.
And it's just, there's another video where a woman says that he basically slept around and just kind of wrote it off. Just trashy human beings. Like,
is
no
he evil?
Wonder.
No, I'm just kidding.
Is he evil? No wonder. Because here, now that's an extreme, right? Yeah. I would say he's probably in the worst 10% of what I would call the Christian faith representation in the world, even. Probably in the worst 10%.
He's exactly who people think of who don't go to church.
Exactly.
Think
but
churches.
He is creating part of the stereotype that completely taints people's view of Christianity. And it happens in much smaller ways that reinforce that. But it's people like him, or people like Jesse Duplantis, that stands in front of an entire crowd talking about how his watch is worth more than most people's houses, flaunting it. Kenneth Copeland needing his own jet because he doesn't want to fly in a tin can full of demons. Like, just gregarious, over-the-top, arrogant, narcissistic behavior.
It reminds me of, you're hitting hot-button words over here.
I'm going to get off my soapbox now.
Hot-button words of narcissism. I was looking up, it might have been 3 weeks ago. Somehow one of my ADD rabbit hole trails ended me on their different types of narcissism.
I was studying narcissism and watching a buoy in the ocean.
Right. I was watching this hurricane develop in the ocean while looking up this. So Okay. Communal narcissism.
Communal
narcissism.
I've never heard of that.
So I didn't know it was a type. But then I start reading about it. And it's scary that it sounds a lot like what a pastor should be. Like, it would almost fit a description of a job that a pastor would take.
Okay.
Communal narcissism.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Are you about to read me the criteria?
Inflated perception of oneself with a bigger setting than just their immediate environment. They feel like they're connected to a bigger purpose.
Like they're a star in their own show.
Bigger purpose.
Okay.
And they're a part
like
of that
special.
Purpose. And they're a part of that purpose.
Okay.
Here's what I want. I'm going to read off some of these things, and then we'll dive into it, because I think it ties extremely well with what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because some of it I read off, I'm like, that's true in church? But I don't know that that's bad. Like, it's like, where do we draw the line? So some things to help define communal. Now, there are some things that separate it.
Mm-hmm.
But let me read these off for you. So, first quality of a communal narcissist.
Communal narcissist. When it says communal, what does that mean? Is it a narcissist
more of a
to a group?
To a group.
Like a group narcissist?
Yes, like
communal,
a community.
Like community.
Community narcissist.
Your local community narcissist.
Extreme dedication to specific charities or causes.
Okay.
Often talking about having a mission or a calling.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see where this gets a little muddy. Some of it's not as bad, though. Stirring excess drama or conflict at charitable or work-related events. Coming across as a martyr. Like they are sacrificing a lot for the cause. Believing they are the best at something even when there's no evidence. Only seeming to show concern for societal needs in public.
Okay.
And so I may be reading, you know, some of these and people who are listening or you and me.
But
probably.
Almost to a T, that fits the people we just spoke of.
Right, 100%. But there's a line because often taking up about having a mission or a calling. Like mm-hmm. that is most pastors. Most pastors will tell you their mission, or most Christians will tell you that their mission and that their calling is of a higher purpose.
Yeah.
Extreme dedication to specific charities or causes.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not. You know, like, technically Jesus is that. So there's a lie between, which I think is a perfect description of narcissism in general. We've mentioned on the show before, you know, we've touched on narcissism. It's a hot, like, mm-hmm. it's a hot topic. We deal with that in counseling. A lot of people will throw out the word, they're narcissists. If anybody does anything selfish, automatically, they're a narcissist.
Yeah.
They don't care. They're a narcissist.
No, what it is every spouse or partner who has been done wrong by their spouse or partner calls their spouse or partner a narcissist.
Right.
Very predictable.
But some narcissistic qualities are not bad to have.
So you think we should become this way a little bit?
Not saying that you should. So the general description of a narcissist, inflated sense of self-esteem,
mm-hmm.
overestimates their intelligence, abilities, capabilities, dominance, inability to empathize with others. I think that's the worst quality to have, which we've talked about. Insensitive to the needs of others, also. It's mm-hmm. a definition of selfishness. Arrogant, loud, big person in the room, entitled, highly self-involved, a deep desire for praise and compliments. Like, to a fault, some of us are unconsciously this.
Okay.
We all seek praise. We all seek compliments. Mm-hmm. It makes us feel good. To what extent can probably get to a certain place about narcissism?
Yeah. Well, the thing that sticks out to me there is those are all descriptions of somebody that's completely self-saturated, self-consumed.
Right.
Egocentric. All about me. And not just all about me in that I want all the attention, but it's in a gregarious, over-the-top way. I want unconditioned. I want to be worshipped. I want to be special. I want to be elevated. And I can't see past myself. To the point that I have absolutely the inability nor the desire to care about you. Unless I need to fake it to elevate myself in the moment.
Right.
Which is where I think it goes back to, like, when you're taught the communal, that they will say the right things in public that help them out. Like, they'll care about the cause. They'll say the right things about a cause in public, but it may or may not reflect the beliefs of their heart as much as it allows them to get more power or esteem or attention in that moment.
So here's an interesting flip to it.
A flip.
Another type of narcissism is covert narcissism.
Covert? I'm scared you're going to start saying something. I'm going to be like, that's me, man.
This is what they've defined as. It's the complete opposite with the same theme. Very, very, very self-focused in the opposite direction. Okay. I always heard Matt Chandler say, pride is the focus of self, whether it's self-pity or self-pride.
Ooh,
and
that's
so
a good line.
Covert narcissism is the opposite. So. Introverted. Difficulty taking criticism, feeling and expressing they are not good enough, often plays the victim, shames and blames others for their mistakes, poor self-esteem, insecure and low confidence.
So just the polar opposite.
With the center being you.
I'm having a hard time. I understand what's saying. I'm having a hard time picturing it.
A lot of people are like this.
A lot more, yeah.
Yeah, a lot more people are like this. Like, there's the, you know, that plays into the whole, like, REBT therapy where it's, like, feeling not good enough and things like that. Like, I feel like everybody has a sense of that. You know, that seems to be a pretty common worldview in Christianity where there's a sense of not feeling good enough. But I don't know. Like, so this is where I just want to ask you. Like, that's why it's hard for me to ever say that person is narcissistic.
Because in some ways it's very specific, and in some ways it's incredibly vague.
Yeah. It's very common.
And we all have moments like that.
And we all have moments where we're all narcissistic.
Self-pity or self-praise.
You could switch narcissistic for selfish, and it's the same qualities. I think the only thing that may stick out is you can't see the other side. You can't get beyond yourself in any capacity.
Well, there's a difference. And if it's a momentary pattern of behavior or a longstanding personality that drives the behavior, I think that's the difference. We all can be self-centered buttholes from time to time. The difference is somebody that truly has narcissistic personality disorder, it's a pervasive pattern of who they are, right? It is DNA out. It is the way that they are. Not just, I'm having a moment of selfishness and I'm acting out of character.
That's good.
But a pervasive, it is who they are.
It is a pattern within themselves.
Yeah.
I read something that said, by this definition, this is gonna upset a lot of people. I probably shouldn't say this, but it's just something I read, so take it for you, which one. By definition, the Southern Baptist Convention is narcissistic.
That's what it said.
In personality.
In the
consistent pattern that it flows through.
Yeah.
In some of those qualities, there's more than not.
Who are you reading?
I don't, like I said, it's an ADD rant. So I was just clicking on stuff, and you start diving into it, and you don't know where you end up. But they also said, like, the Catholic Church started. Like, there's patterns within, not just that. It was just more.
Here's
recent.
The problem. Anytime that you have a person or a institution that is in a prominent place of influence and dominance, it inevitably will misstep at times.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I agree.
And it inevitably will receive criticism from the minority, whatever the ulterior view is. Maybe not minority, but the opposite view will criticize it and make those kind of brash accusations, right? Which, if a duck's a duck, we need to call it a duck.
Right.
But sometimes I think we, you know, it's kind of that, like, you know, I'm a both and guy. I live in the middle. It's like the two extremes, right? Left, right, conservative, whatever, the extremes. They will make these brash, worst case accusations about the other side, you know, to just kind of tear them down. It's kind of an overly dramatic statement. Like, is the Southern Baptist Convention a narcissist? Probably not. But I know a lot of people that would say they are.
Yeah.
You know, but they also hate conservative Christian ideology.
Yeah.
Right? I don't disagree with some of their observations, to be honest.
Yeah.
But they also are fundamentally like, what's your motive? Your motive is they want to dismantle the system altogether.
Yeah.
So they're reading in the worst possible interpretation of the behavior. Saying that, I'd love to kneecap a few of those guys. But that's just a broad statement.
Yeah. No, like I said, it was just something that somebody said. It was funny because you could probably say that about most, not even most religions in general, where there's a sense of calling.
Why do you think that is?
Sense of need.
Why do you think, call it spiritual leadership or leadership in general, attracts people that have narcissism? And I would say, if you're in a leadership position, you're not going to find the self-loathing, the self-pitying narcissist as much as you're going to be the self-aggrandizing, praising narcissist. Would you agree with that?
Kind of, yeah. It's going to be more prominent.
If all I do is see myself as a victim and have pity on myself, I'm not going to put myself in leadership. I'm not going to grow myself.
Yeah.
I'm going to ruin myself.
Yeah.
Right? It's going to take me to I'm going to self-sabotage, not accomplish
much. I see both sides. Like, there's some things within, like, Reform theology, like we talked about it with David a little bit, with like the Calvinist theology.
I'm not saying anything's wrong. I understand where you're going now,
but it's like, you know, like I'm a worm. Like John Piper,
I'm a out
says that.
Yes, I'm gonna out total deprive you.
Right, exactly. Like I'm the worst of the worst. I'm the worm. Mm-hmm. I am not worthy. Like that can get to that extent. Sometimes.
I understand,
but other than that, I mean, it's mainly like the self idolizing ones.
I hadn't thought about it that way. That's a good point. So why do positions of leadership, whether it be spiritual leadership or otherwise, attract people that have narcissistic qualities? It's a loaded question because I already have an opinion, but I'm asking you the question.
Well, no, that's a good question. I mean, there's a sense to where you go two different ways, I guess.
It's really a hard question.
Well, I'm thinking like most of your audience is vulnerable to belief when logic is not present.
Yeah.
And then in any religion, you know, I mean, it defines logic. You know, God defines logic. So sometimes we throw it out. And then you have somebody that goes on stage and just says whatever, like your guy. I am the main guy who is talking to God, and this is his word through me.
Yeah.
Like when you have an audience that is prepped to believe that, it's easier for those guys to step in and say those things.
They can enter into what would be swirly territory on any other stage.
Right. Like,
and
there's
all of a sudden it's appropriate.
Yeah. There's a prep in the audience to where they need to respect and believe whatever that person is saying. And then just in general, the power of religion is always been constant throughout humanity.
Yeah.
You know, like it's just there's
even
a power within it.
I agree with everything you said. I don't think that's the reason it attracts narcissists.
Okay. Let's hear it out. What you got?
Because the very core of what makes someone narcissistic is self-consumption.
Mm-hmm.
What gives you more of that definition of elevated, worshipped state than positions of power, especially spiritual power?
That's good. Yeah.
They want to be treated like a god.
Mm-hmm.
So what better place to put yourself in a position of God than in a spiritual capacity?
Yeah.
Because when you enter into the spirit, this is what is both scary and terrifying as a pastor, and also probably the greatest place of manipulation. There is no deeper area of a person's life than their spiritual capacity, because it defines who they are, both on this side of the grave, and who they'll become on that side of the grave.
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing else a person can do that interacts with both sides of the grave until you interact. And regardless of belief system, regardless, everyone has a spiritual belief system that defines who they are here on earth, who they're connected to beyond the earth, and what happens after death. And if you can become the manipulator of their soul, tell me of a higher godlike position that you've put yourself in this world. There's not one.
Yeah. I think that's a fair point. That's a good point.
Now, I think the reason people are able to do that, why it takes, is because oftentimes in spiritual situations, people are more willing to embrace what appears to be a dichotomy of beliefs. Oh, this doesn't make sense. Well, we are constantly saying, and I'm about to enter, now it's my turn to jump in the deep end. Yeah, well, God will make sense of it. Mm-hmm. These two things don't have to make sense together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even saying I innately disagree with that in all things. Mm-hmm. But we teach them you have to be okay with tensions that don't feel like they meet in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Because God is the middle and we can't fully understand him this side of death. And so we preach this thing of we have to have this level of like, we have to be okay with things that don't necessarily make sense. And also things that sound a little hooey-dooey.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a person that gets up there and through their charisma, persuasion, and whatever skills that they bring to the table are able to manipulate the crowd to buy into this man as a spiritual authority. Because people also want to be connected. Like we just said, why do you watch the panda? You want to be connected to something significant. So if you come to believe that this man is a man of God, because also the thing we believe in Scripture is that there are times that he has placed people here on this earth that have a supernatural purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I think people want to believe they're living in a time period where God is providing a supernatural intervention to humanity. And when you meet someone that you feel like carries themselves with an extra layer of spiritual authority, it's tempting to want to believe, oh, maybe this is God's next prophet And I can, and I don't want to be one of the ones that rejects, right? No. I don't want to be a doubting Thomas. And so I want to be connected to the movement.
Yeah.
And so I think it becomes tempting because all of a sudden, we've talked about this before, you think you're part of something so much bigger than you really are.
Because that's what, I mean, that's what everybody wants. At the end of the day, mm-hmm. you want to be part of something bigger than yourself. Like, and that was one of the qualities, but, and that's where I would kind of disagree. Like, mm-hmm. some of these things are just how humanity is made because there's a, you know, there's a need maybe not being met mm-hmm. where if you're not a Christian or you're not a part of a church, there is that desire. And when you yeah. do that, it's just sometimes we connect to churches and people get hurt and churches are yeah. messy and like.
And if this is going to sound awful, but if you look at the people that are most, I think, persuaded by these false teachers, that's what I'll call it, they often have a shallow theology, right? Like it doesn't take much time diving into scripture to start realizing there's something seriously wrong with what's being said right here. And that's easy for me to say because I wasn't raised under that persuasion. And so I'm immediately like, I don't believe that. And some people will probably look at some of the stuff I believe and be like, Marty, how do you believe that? Right. And so I got to be careful with that because I don't know. Like you say often, like if I was raised in that tradition, would I be more tempted to kind of toe the line and give them credit? Yeah, who knows? Maybe. But to me, it's often people that are looking for like an emotional experience. They've got these little verses that like promise prosperity or hope or whatever. And they spend less time being critical of what is scripture really saying here.
Curveball.
Yeah,
no, I think you did a great job explaining all of that.
I think this is the time we should announce, like for people that want purpose, for 12 easy payments in 1995, you That's can join
right. the Large 23 on Soul
in Jesus podcast prayer team.
Prayer team.
Where we pray for you.
Right.
They don't pray for us.
Right.
Because God's given us this platform.
Right.
So if you'll submit to us our $19.95 per month, per member of the household
right.
that needs prayed for,
that's right.
we will dedicate 19 minutes and 95 seconds per month praying for your name specifically.
But if you do the premium membership at $30 a month,
you get
two friends per per membership that will also be added to
the And book. We actually will send you one of the Kleenexes that we use to wipe our brow during That's the right. podcast.
That's right.
An autographed selfie.
So.
And a personal Tattoos in Jesus temporary tattoo.
We do need to get this.
Anyway, what's your curveball? I keep going for days here. So we're going to play this song right now, and we're not
going
to stop
it. No, we're not going down that rabbit hole again. We're not going
people.
Down that rabbit hole. Curveball is, I think, the one thing that defines, we'll just go with the spiritual, religious mm-hmm. aspect of what we're talking about, money.
Money, money, money.
Because if that same guy that you pulled up, he's mm-hmm. saying all these things.
Yeah.
Makes $25,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. According to him, he does. Well, 40. He said he made 40.
If we honestly knew that yeah. they are not taking a lot of money.
Broke is Job.
Yeah. And they are saying these things.
Mm-hmm.
There's an element of genuineness that is still there, even with him saying the things he's saying.
Oh, like you still want to believe him.
I think money makes the difference in whether it's true or not. Whether people feel like the person that is up there, who is in this position, is genuine or not. Like, mm-hmm. and that's it's a hard thing to say because you look at a lot of churches and a lot of pastors, they make pretty well. I mean, to be honest, a lot of these yeah. churches. And so that's what makes it hard for people to grasp the message that they're preaching because the money aspect. So if you take away the money aspect, I think
so
the
what
message.
You're, so what you're saying is
easily. Or more clearly received by those who are
so are you saying it's
it.
Easier to poke holes in the rich guys like this
because
it feels like it's driven by money?
Yes.
It is driven by money.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Take it out of it, though.
And they're still persuasive.
And they're still like, yeah, if this guy was making $25,000 a year, our approach wouldn't be he's a false teacher, let's execute him. it would be like, let's fix his theology.
No, this man is delusional. He's either bipolar or schizophrenic, and he needs a shot of Haldol.
That's be a completely different approach because
yeah.
then he's not. There's no benefit
mm-hmm.
financial. Like money muddies everything. which is why Jesus talked about it the most. It muddies everything.
Here's the difference. But money also gives you power. Power allows you to continue this image on bigger platforms and keep the energy moving. Right? Oftentimes when you see a poor narcissist, what you see is a person who always gains the crowd in the short term, but loses it in the long term because people start to see through them.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a high turnover in their following.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I also say he, because the vast majority of people with these qualities are men. Not exclusively, but there is a
higher...
It tends to fit the male stereotype more often than not.
Yeah.
So
my it reminds me, because my dad always used to make the joke, like the religion business, we talked about that. We've actually talked about this topic before, but like there's the money, just it's like when a pastor gets on stage and says, I'm called to this new job.
Yeah.
And it's a $50,000 raise.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew it was a $50,000 raise. Nobody, 99% of the people who hear that won't believe them.
I don't believe them.
That's what I'm saying. It muddies everything. Like, it muddies the whole entire
message. You know, that's a good example of how this happens. And I'm not going to say this is narcissism. It's just, in religious circles, we use the dumbest language possible to justify selfish behaviors.
Yeah.
Not even selfish. Like, understandable behaviors.
Right. Logical. Because sometimes it's logical. Because
here's the thing. If I got a job working for Bucky's, right? We've talked about Bucky's.
Hey,
money.
Ain't no doubt.
Right? And they're like, hey, we need you to relocate to St. Petersburg, Florida to do your training, right? So you go down, you take your family, you relocate there, you live there for 3 years, and you do pretty good, and you're an assistant manager. But then the Bucky's in your hometown has a manager job opening, and you're like, I don't really want to live in St. Petersburg. I want to get closer to my family. My parents are getting older. I want them to see their grandkids. You know, all the reasons. And so we apply for that position, and we get it, right? So now I'm doing a transfer from a Bucky's to another Bucky's, and I'm going to get a significant pay increase, but it also puts me close to my family, back at home. All I would say is, hey, I had a great opportunity. It puts me closer to home, and I'm going to take it. And everybody would say, why wouldn't you?
Right.
I would do the same thing. Hate to see you go. Love the opportunity you're walking into. But in the church, what we do is we go in and we get a seminary degree or whatever the terminal degree that we get that we think now we need to enter into ministry, right? Some people just think that low qualifications are all that's needed to, you know, to preach to the masses. But what they'll do is, you know, they get out and they just need a church to accept them. They're like, just give me a job. And so they end up going on these job postings and stuff, and they'll apply to jobs from here to Timbuktu, and then some in a little church that needs a pastor and you need an opportunity will accept you, and you're green and you're still wet behind the ears, and you come over there and you start to get some experience for a couple years. But it's a small, difficult church, and it's just not enjoyable to serve in that capacity. It's just not, right? Churches that are struggling for a reason. But you get experience and you become better. Well, then you're going to get frustrated one day and be like, screw this. Let me see what else is out there. And you're going to find another church that's a step up, right, in some way. Maybe it's closer to home. Maybe it's more pay. Maybe it more suits your skill set, whatever it is. And you apply for that job and you get it. And then what do? We tell the congregation, you know what? God's called me to a new opportunity. I prayed about this, spoke to my family, and God's made it clear to me that this is a step I need to take, right? And then you go to that church, so on and so forth. And all of a sudden, you get good enough to be in a little bit of a demand. And then it never fails. It never fails that pastor will take a job at a church closer to home, where they're from. Either where his wife's from, where he's from, where their family at. Almost always, that pastor heads back home and says, you know, God has made it clear to me. He has called me after praying with my family and looking at opportunities. And they over-spiritualize what was a business decision.
Yeah.
Just say, I miss my family. I love you guys. I miss my family. This was a great opportunity. And it puts, when somebody says that, I respect the heck out of them. When they try to mask what was a business, personal decision in spiritual language, and like it makes it untouchable or something, it pisses me off.
But at the, on the flip side, though, how, they're still going to get drug through the mud. Like, that
then just be honest.
People will say, well, that was selfish. Why is he going here? We're not his family. You know, I mean, they're still going to a certain, but I completely agree with you. Like, there's, if they're moving back or they're taking a right, there's a spiritual blanket. It's like blanket emails.
Yeah.
There's a blanket statement that's not directing what's actually going on. It's just like this random.
And you can't. The problem is when you use statements like, you know, God has made it clear to me that this is the next move. You can't push back.
No, you can't. No.
Right? It's almost like saying, I don't agree with what you did. And the person says, you know, I did the absolute best I could with what I had in that moment. What do you say to that? No, you didn't. I mean, it's like, okay, well, do better next time. Like, it's this defensive way of, like, you can't push back on that.
But does the environment create that to have to be used? Like, what I was thinking was, if somebody said, I'm going to go plant my own church.
Yeah.
And they go, they plant their own church. And they were honest about why they planted the church.
Yeah.
And they said, I feel like I will do a good job in leading and building my own church because I know what I feel like would work compared to where I've been.
Yeah.
Or will they say, God has called me to this area to minister to? Because if you say the first one, even though it's honest,
people are not going to like it. People are going to say, you don't think we're doing it right here.
Right.
And you want to go do it yourself. Good luck, you arrogant.
Right. So it almost prompts.
That's fair. Language. Because you know why? I actually said this to a pastor recently who was leaving a church, right? Not for bad reasons, just because. I said, this is when the business of church and the personalness of church collide, and it's hard.
Yeah.
Because if you attend a church, it's personal to you, right? It is your source of spiritual engagement, probably, right? Growth. Right. It's personal, right? Yeah. It's personal. It's not a job. It's not business. It's personal.
Right.
But when you hire a pastor, you're paying them to make it personal, but it's business.
Right.
And so on some level, they're being paid to make business decisions, but to pretend like it's personal. And I'm not saying the relationship you have with your pastor or your pastor's purpose in being at your church is not personal.
Yeah.
And that it doesn't become personal as you get to know that. It's also their job. They're getting paid to orchestrate the activities of this church. And so then what happens is they make a business decision that's also probably personal.
Right.
But it doesn't align with what is 100% personal for the congregation, and they get their feelings hurt.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they shouldn't. There are times that it does feel a little rough, but they're also in a lose-lose scenario.
Yeah.
Because no matter how personal it may be to them, there is a business element to it because that's their livelihood.
Yeah.
That's their job.
Right.
That's who they are. It makes me question whether we were ever meant to have that structure or not.
Well, I was going to ask.
We don't have time for that.
But we don't have time.
Like, we don't have time for that.
Like, my thought was,
we're not going to do a business.
Is there a way to marry these two things perfectly? Or is there always, is there supposed to be, is God's intention for there to be tension in these two things? Or are we missing the mark in some way? So that's where I go. We're not going to dive in. That's a lot. But it brings up the question. Because I really think money and finances within a church muddies everything. But I don't know that you can live without it. And I don't know and that's the battle.
I mean, and some of these things are really just so self-concerned. I mean, we've kind of gotten away from the narcissist conversation. But even church budgets. You know, I know of churches that consciously and intentionally create a false budget, and their goal is to always appear to be at deficit. And when confronted, I'm not going to tell you, I could call names right now, but to protect the innocent and the guilty, I'm not going to name call, that when confronted and say, we don't have the means to pay these people, but we're going to put it in the ministry lines, and it creates a deficit so that our tithes and offerings never cover the projected budget. They said, yeah, and that will stay that way because we never want the congregation to believe that we have enough because then they will quit giving. And so to do an honest budget that represents true gains and losses will then translate to the congregation feeling like we're doing good enough we don't have to give as much. And so they manipulate the budget. And I'm not saying that's right. Like, if God calls us to give to the church, right, that's a different debate. But I'm saying if he does, and if you feel like God's telling you to give, you should respect that regardless of what the financial status of the church is, right? Like, that's, like, the end doesn't justify the means. Like, two wrongs don't make it right. So just because you feel like people are less responsive to what you think is a biblical command to give to the church, and so you manipulate the budget to provide false expectations that makes them think we're in a bad shape so they give more, is worse than the person that just doesn't tithe. Because right. You are manipulating the masses instead of just ignoring the convictions that you may or may not have about that.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to go ahead and go on the record here and say there is far less about tithing in the New Testament than there is about dishonest gain.
Yeah. I agree.
All right, I'm done here.
But it all ties back in. Narcissism has a selfish element to it. And you can't be selfish without wanting financial gain.
And here's...
because gain equals power.
Narcissism carries so much taboo. Knock it down to just, we can be freaking arrogant. Our egos can explode. Right? It's easy for me, even in talking about how much I dislike that, say that pattern of church leadership, budgeting and stuff, to become equally egotistical, thinking I'm doing a better job by spotting their BS.
Yeah.
So I'm just being arrogant in a different capacity.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? So, like, you have to check yourself. That just because you've spotted what you think is, like, a grotesque error, and you're like, I will wave that flag, that you're not committing the same crime in just a different mountain.
Yeah. Becomes a vicious circle.
Vicious circle.
But we'll see what happens.
Bring it home. What final thought, and then we're out of here. Good thought.
Final thought. Oh, God. One first thought. Of all, I just want to let everybody know that's listening. We do love church. I think church is great. Community is great. The mission is great. I think we've muddied
true
a lot of lines.
Pursuit
yeah.
of God through Christ amongst his people is the most beautiful and powerful thing you'll ever be a part of.
Yeah.
The perversion of that is probably the most painful thing you can ever be a part of.
That's it. Retweet, cosign, retweet. That's all we need to say.
I don't think you
don't be a narcissist.
You can't say retreat anymore. It's like
we re-X.
Re-X.
X marks the spot.
X marks the spot.
That was a great statement. End on the church comment.
Okay.
Let me ask you a question. End on the narcissist side.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would imagine people leave this podcast thinking, "Am I a narcissist? Am I not a narcissist? How do I know?" Tips and advice for people after what we've talked about.
Anyone can struggle with arrogance. We're all egos, right? We're all self-consumed people on some level, whether it be for self-pity or self... what's the other one?
Pride.
Pride. We all struggle with that. Not many people are so pathological they can be labeled a narcissist. That is not that common.
Right. Don't everyone, have a pattern.
Everyone can be self-consumed. Everyone at their worst state is self-consumed.
Mm.
Don't mistake arrogance, pride, or being in a bad place as I'm a narcissist. You catch me on the wrong day, I probably look that way. Not many people are actually narcissists. And the ones that are, they don't aware of it, and they'll deny it.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty pathological.
Yeah.
So, all right, guys. Until next time, we love you. We appreciate you.
Reach out, large23 on SweetWeet at yahoo.com any comments. We've
large
had a few
23 few on SweetWeet.
2323, the numbers. Large23. On SweetWeet at yahoo.com. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, we'd love to hear from you.
Y'all behave yourselves.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of TNJ. Don't forget to check out the links to any of our guests in the show description.
And check out tattoosandjesus.org for additional show information or to submit your questions, comments, or curse words.